Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He is Andrew on the board. S&P futures are up 10, NASDAQ futures up 76. Well, you knew that was going to happen because we were down yesterday, and we have to buy the dip. So, Andrew, which one of you, do we have Mr. Kevin?
Yes, you do.
How you doing, bud? Happy Wednesday.
Hey, all.
Do you think, Kevin, any of our fine near-to-well producers are capable of using AI, and wherever it says $1 million in any of these lead-ins, they could change it to $1 billion. Because $1 million ain't chump change anymore, right?
It's just walking around money.
I know it's if you're a big shot now and you want to light your cigar with $100 bill, don't you feel like you're almost kind of a weenie or something?
Yeah, but you can't light a cigar with Bitcoin. So
true. I think it's time for us to have like a $200 bill, don't you? Or $500 or something. We used to have $1,000 bills and $10,000. Now they only go back and forth between banks or something, or they even use them.
Well, if we're going to do that, while we're at it, we might as well just go to $2 bills instead of $1 bills, because then, you know, same concept.
Well, that's
you can bring back the deuce.
Well, it's still there. I have a few.
I have one actually that. That our buddy Bob Golden gave me, and he gave it to me, and he said, "Keep this. This is a good luck. $2 bills are good luck." And so I tuck it behind my driver's license in my wallet, and every time someone asks me, like if I'm buying alcohol or whatever, and they ask me, they said driver's license, and I take it out, I see the $2 bill, and it makes me smile. It makes me think of our dear departed buddy, and I smile. So, you know, $2 bills have a very important utility in my life.
Every time we have an accounting question, I think of him. Or tax question, I mean. Great guy. One of the guys from the... talk about a shot at people already this morning. When the people at the Federal Reserve used to come to work, they used to hang around at the series afterward, and I would sit down at a big table with these guys, and one of the dudes, I think he was on the show once, and I remember I couldn't give his name out because they didn't want him on the air. So he was a Fed dude known only as McPee, even though I couldn't give his real name. Every once in a while he would get a huge batch of them, and he'd bring them over to Sirius, and people at the table all around, hey, could I buy a couple of those? And he'd like, people loved them. Bet you don't know who's on it. You probably do.
Actually, I don't. I don't pay attention. Who is on it?
I think it's Jefferson.
Could be. I have to go get my wallet and check.
Yeah, me too. It might not be. Wait a minute. Who's? I thought. Hamilton's on the 20, right, or the 10? It's Washington, Lincoln. God, I'm gonna have to start to check here. We should know that. I know.
I'm going the other room. Get my and get it.
Well, I know the what's his name is on the Benjamin Franklin's on the 100 and Grant's on the 50. And let's see, we got Hamilton Jackson's on the 20, and I think Hamilton's on the 10, I believe. And I think Jefferson's on the deuce. You know, I grew up.
I got it right here. Let's see. What do we have here? First, I got to get my driver's license out of there.
Do you have a real one?
A real driver's license?
No, a real ID driver's license.
Yeah.
Was that a pain in the ass to get in Michigan?
No, it was pretty easy.
Okay.
I just went in, gave them what they needed, and then they sent it to me. All right, we are looking at, yeah, it is Thomas Jefferson on the $2 bill.
Well, I used to have those when I was a kid because my parents used to always go to the racetrack. Of course, it was a $2 bet, so they were all over the racetrack. So, I'm surprised they don't have them for the lottery. The lotto is a $2 bet now, right? For the big one?
One of the big ones went to like $5.
Well, you know the scratch-offs?
I don't know which one, but it went to like $5, and they said, I mean, it runs up their jackpots pretty quickly, but the theory was that there would be more winners or something. I don't know. I had somebody telling me about this, because I had no idea. Apparently, this happened many months ago, supposedly it's to get more winners, but that isn't happening. So,
now anybody who's ever taken math would say, "Whoa, where'd that come from?" I'm surprised the people. Once in a while, the daily one, people win that all the time. It's one less number. But still, I mean, it's a, you know, you don't, I go to the gas station on one Sunday and it'll be $400,000. The next one, the Sunday, it's back down to 100. The next one, it's 250. The next one's on down to 100. People win that like every other week. Anywho, I saw a little bit of it. I was waiting for you. What is the story? What is the full Dabo Sweeney story?
Well, which one?
Well, the press conference where all he did was tell everybody how hard he works every day and how it was his life, and then what, 2 days later he quit?
Did Dabo Sweeney quit? I didn't think he quit. I didn't hear that.
I thought one of the flashes I saw was that he resigned, maybe changed his mind or something.
No, he was, you know, he did do it in his press conference, made it very, very clear that God is at work there.
But he also said something about how crummy his team was during the press conference. What was that all about? Did he think that they didn't let him do the enough portal or what?
This is his comment. He says, "This is a big week for us as we reset what's in front of us. That's what our focus will be. We'll just continue to help these players transform their lives. I don't know God's big picture plan, but he'll use this for good. I don't have any doubt about that. It might be 20 years from now. It might be a player saying that this was the best thing that happened to him and taught him a lot. I know God is at work here and will use this opportunity to glorify him through this. We have a great group of young men, great leaders and seniors. My focus is to do what I think is best, which is to coach, teach, and mentor our young men."
So he's still there.
We won't win a national championship. We've won three of those in 130 years. That doesn't mean we can't finish well and enjoy the journey. Now, I don't have a problem with that last statement. We can't finish well and enjoy the journey. I'm just figuring God's not at football practice.
No. I think he said something about the team not being very good. And I wonder if they have some budget issue versus... You wonder what the struggles are going on here. Because, I mean, you and I think both feel, you because you've got all that management training and stuff, and me, I don't know why I think this way, but there's got to be some interesting conversations in some of the boards of these schools. Like, you know, what exactly are we doing? I mean, today, U.S. News, or yesterday, U.S. News talked their list of top 100 colleges, right? And, like, University of Chicago is 6 and Northwestern's 9. And there's got to be some people at Northwestern going, are we really going down this road? What do we need to for? I'm not saying that would be my opinion, but that opinion at least has to be out there on one or two of the board members, don't you think? I mean, I can't even imagine what the total budget of Northwestern is, the hospitals and everything. It's probably, you know, what's Wisconsin and Illinois are like $8 billion.
Man, so you got to remember, these trustees all get they probably get into the entourage for the bowl game.
I get that part, but I mean, at some point, somebody's going to at least say, "Hey, the tail is wagging the dog here." I mean, what are we doing? I mean, even when I look at North Carolina, you know, with the fiasco they got going with what's his name, the guy from New England, Belichick. Somebody's got to say, guys, we're running a $6 billion operation here. This football team, we wonder if it's even making any money. What are we doing? I don't think. It's kind of like the show, Kevin. The question's got to get asked. I'm not saying you change your policy or whatever, but to just sit there and go, and not say, what exactly are we doing? I mean, UCLA, their budget's $12 billion, and they have to join the Big Ten to make, you know, 20 extra million. So your girls' volleyball team has to fly to New Jersey. I mean, somebody's got to say, even if it's $100 million, what is it? Was it 1% of the budget?
It truly doesn't make any sense for the things that they're doing for any sport other than football, maybe a little for basketball, but that's a limited number of programs. It's hard to say. I will say this, another Clemson thing. Clemson did have an incredible feat in their loss to Syracuse. They gained over 500 yards and only scored 21 points. And it wasn't like they had, you know, five or six turnovers or anything. They had two, which obviously you don't want, but two shouldn't be a killer. If you get 500 yards, you should score more than 21 points.
Totally clam up in the red zone or what?
I don't know, because I didn't watch the game. You understand, Clemson was the preseason number four, which shows you about how valuable preseason rankings are. But they were considered the number four team in the country, and they have this guy, their quarterback, Cade Klubnik, was, you know, a Heisman guy. To, you know, pay attention to him for the Heisman, which I've never, you know, he's okay, but I've never seen that in him. So I never got that. I think the biggest thing for Clemson right now and for Dabo Swinney is that there's nobody that resembles Trevor Lawrence or Deshaun Watson there. And when they won, when Clemson was at their best, it was because they had those guys.
Well, I mean, you and I,
they had high first round draft picks in the NFL. That's a bit of an equalizer in college football.
Well, yeah. Look what the difference is on the Irish on the defensive line. Lose a couple of guys in the NFL, and all of a sudden you get Butkus, right? Not Dick Butkus either. It just happens. Flip the subject a little bit to pro. I was I mentioned the first game we were talking about. It was probably more on a Monday, but the first game where Detroit basically got their ass kicked by Green Bay. And Green Bay was this, you know, pretty up and coming young team, youngest team in football. And now all of a sudden they got decimated by injuries. But the interior of the Detroit line was basically getting its ass kicked. The center kind of retired surprisingly, all pro center. After the draft, wasn't it? He retired, but it was right about then. But no real ability to replace. I think one of the guards went somewhere else, a free agent, and something. But the interior of the line against the Packers was really horrible. And Tony Romo kept saying, "Guys, it's only the first game. The two new guards they have, and if they draft them or what they did," he goes, "these guys, they're going to be pretty good. Give them a chance, you know." And then I watched them the other night. And I don't know who does the color on Monday night. All he talked about was the two guards in Detroit, these two young guys, basically kicking ass. A block on the first guy and then going out and getting a linebacker, two blocks. He goes, "these guys are really playing well." He was exactly right. Guys, it's their first game. Give them a break, you know. And I think that's one of the...
Because in their Monday night game, they rushed for over 200 yards. Yeah. Way over 200 yards, so yeah.
I think that's kind of one of, if you look at the all portal versus still trying to recruit sort of teams, I think the Irish have an issue, and I don't know if they can stop it or not. They have an issue when, if you're bringing in recruits, you know, from high school, like some teams still do, and they still seem to think that that's their plan, although they have portal people too. Your guys, especially if you lose a couple people off your old line, and you being a lineman, notice more than me, you got to give those guys 3-4 games to get their act together. Even if they're fledgling all pros or Hall of Famers, your first couple games in college, unless you're really unique, are probably not going to be your best. And if that's the case, if that's your strategy, you probably don't want to. Now, maybe you have to. You don't want to schedule the two toughest games on your schedule for the first two games.
Probably not. But TV loves it.
Yeah, TV loves it. And I'm going to say that the Irish line, which looked terrible those first two games, by the end of the year, there's going to be a couple people there. They always seem to get them. That look like they're destined for pros, but they didn't look like that 2 weeks ago. Is that a fair assessment?
That's probably true. Yeah.
I just kind of wonder where all this. I'm wondering where everything is heading. obviously, I wonder where the politics is heading. I wonder where the sports is heading. I wonder what the difference is between the Cubs and the Bears, and I'll lump them together. View of the world and everybody, the Bears' view of the world obviously is 5 years from now. People are paying $400 for a football ticket, and maybe 10 years from now they're paying $1,000 for a football ticket. I look at the economy, and I give a little bit of a report this week. I'm gonna try and get, and maybe you and I can do it Friday. The stuff I've been reading about the farm communities, God, they're in horrible shape. The banker, there's more farm bankruptcies the first quarter this year than all last year. I mean, there has been no, there still is that, well, there hasn't been some, virtually no soybean sales to China. Whether that happens all in one day or something, I hope so. But now they're talking about these farmers that are trying to puke their corn out from last year so they get a place to store their soybeans this year. I mean, they're in full fast market trying to save themselves. And, that's not good, even though the market seems to go up every day because of AI. We're getting this real bifurcation sort of everywhere. I mean, I don't look at... I mean, PTI is doing fine. We've got some great new clients lately, and, it's... But I don't see me... I mean, we run a tight ship here, but I don't see me throwing $1,000 down for a football ticket 10 years from now. That's not in the cards here. We're not going to be making 10 times as much money 10 years from now. No friggin' way.
I mean, totally depends on the cost of recliners. You got to have substitutes.
Well, I mean, I'm saying with their view,
tongue-in-cheek. Don't take.
Yeah,
serious.
I get it. But I'm saying their view is a lot different, and maybe my view would be a lot different if I could expand the place to 15 branches using government money. Or if all of a sudden I got, and don't take this wrong. If all of a sudden I had, government stuff. When I say that, a lot of minority places do. They get stock every day. They get from places and they start their day with $10,000. Well, hell, I'd love to do that. And that's that some minority firms do and have for a long time. That's not quote fair, but it happens. Now, do I even get to compete on that business? No, I could probably charge a third of what they're charging and still make though. So I mean, there's these inequalities kind of all over the place. But I don't see the general person marching forward that much to where other people's view of the world is like. But two things have to happen, Kevin, and you know this. For the Bears to do what they're doing, and I think both of us are smart enough business-wise to see what they're doing. They think inflation is going to take them someplace. To the next world. And by the way, it appears that this administration is going to be the same as the Obama administration, only maybe worse. They're going to pour money in the system, say they're doing a good job, when in fact the undercurrent is nowhere near as good as they say it is. I mean, Obama did that from 2000 on, for God's sake. Was he 2000? Whoever was 2000. No, he was Bush, but Bush did the same thing. And Obama did it worse, 2008. Look at the money supply growth from 2000 to 2008. It was way higher than the real growth in Obama coming out of 2007, 2008. Now, whether Bush or Obama didn't even know what the money supply was, I don't know. But during their time, that's what they did, okay? That's why you have healthcare where you have it. That's why your housing prices, that's where the market's where it is. It's not because you or I were genius investors. It's because the dollar's worth a boatload less, and they, when one works the other. So the now we're doing. It's very hard to turn that around. So I would be very surprised if the current administration or any administration right now said, "Wait a minute, we're gonna have a come to Jesus meeting. We're not gonna do this anymore." And oh, by the way, we don't care if the market goes down and housing goes down 20%. Nobody's going to do that. I don't care if it's Trump, Obama, Solomon. They're not going to do that because they're so far deep into this thing right now. So okay, now if you're going to play that game, like your Bears clearly are, now why can they play it and not you and me? Well, because they can go to the governor and what sounds innocent, how about freezing our taxes for like 15 years? Well, if you think inflation is going to be 6% a year or 7 or 5 to your ticket prices, and you can hold that solid, whoa. And if you can go to the state and say, well, you know, we really want to use our own money, but guess what? We really want to pay this 6-7% interest that maybe the Bears would have to pay, or 10 or something. I don't think it'd be 10. How about you make this some kind of a something district, and you let us put piggyback on state money at like 3%? Even you and I go, okay, if I'm borrowing at 3%, and I got no property tax increase for a decade or more, and I think ticket prices are going up 5 years, Kevin, even you and I can be wealthy beyond our wildest dreams 15 years from now. Unless football falls apart and everybody just goes to soccer instead of football. Right?
Well, or nobody goes to football, period, because we just stay home for it.
Well, I was coming. I actually drove through the traffic on Sunday with the Bears game. And, of course, the scary part is, this is the problem when you're on the air, Kevin. I think some knaves must have picked up on my secret route around downtown, because there were people on my route. Now, this is bull. Well, they must have rerouted some buses down Canal Street or whatever street I was on, Jefferson or something, Clinton. And I see these buses and all these guys in traffic that's not moving. They're standing on these buses with their Bear jerseys on, and I'm going, you got to really love it. Without any sort of a people mover in and out of the place, without any kind of real, they won't let cabs line up there. I mean, they make it so hard for people to go to one of these games, and yet people do it. I don't know, I guess I did it when I was young. My cousin would invite me, but I would never have done it on my own. I mean, is there a chance that 15 years from now, football goes the way of boxing? I don't know.
It's still incredibly popular.
Yes.
So I'm thinking 15 years is probably no, that there really isn't a chance. But you are right. Attending a game, the game day experience, you know, I live 25 minutes from Notre Dame Stadium. Most years I don't go to a single game, and I can go as often as I want, pretty much. And I don't, because it's a pain in the butt to go. It's long. We've shared a complaint about that plenty of times. So it's unduly long as a game day experience. And really, the people who go and who really love it, they go because they party all day, tailgate all day, all that kind of stuff. And frankly, tailgating, it gets kind of lost on me too. I don't know. Parking lots are just not my idea of a good tavern.
We do it if our guys are there.
Yeah, we do it if our guys are there. But I do that because I'm visiting with our friends, not because not because I love it. And some of them just love the whole tailgate experience. I mean, and there's lots of people that do. Go to a Packers game sometime.
I bet it's a lot easier to go to a Packers game.
Not only that, but tailgating is huge at baseball games there. So it depends on the culture of the place as you are. But that whole standing in the parking lot while the beer keeps getting warmer doesn't do much for me. So I will go over. I'll go visiting because there's almost somebody almost every week. There's somebody in town, or almost every home game there's somebody in town I want to see. But by an hour before game time, I'm back on the road heading home to watching my recliner. To me, that's a better game day experience than being in the stadium. you know, other people would think that's nuts and that they love being there. I just, you know, I don't. On the other hand, I go to basketball games all the time because it's a 2-hour time slot. It fits. The arena only holds about 9,000. So while the parking lot can be slow getting in and out, it really isn't that big a deal. And so it's, you know, basketball is about a 3-hour commitment to my day. Football is an all day commitment.
I went to one of the games, basketball games one year, and of course I had the pickup truck, right? And all of a sudden there was something else going on, so the parking lot was mopped. So all of a sudden it's not moving that much, and I go, you know, the hell with this. We didn't really tailgate or anything, and I had some beer in there just for not for a basketball game. I was taking it to our house in Michigan City, and so all of a sudden I open up the tailgate, I grab a beer, and I'm sitting on the tailgate sucking on a cold one. This guy comes by and he goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, it looks to me like this parking lot isn't moving so much, so I figured I'll just sit here for a while and have a cold one." He goes, "That's not a bad idea. You got another one?" So there he does, sits on the tailgate, and you know, we had a good conversation. I think the guy was what the hell was he? He was an electrician or something. Nice guy. We had two beers, and all of a sudden he goes, "Looks like it's cleared up. See ya, thanks." And away he went. You know, sometimes the best things happen when you don't even kind of think they're happening. Pretty strange stuff. But you know, you just wonder. You know, I know some of the guys on the Notre Dame feed were pissed at me last week because I was kind of bitching at the TV people, and I know, you know, Lightning is dangerous and all that stuff, but somehow or another, I blame you guys from the guys on the show that every time something comes up, I immediately start thinking of questions like, what if I was doing a show on this? And I was there the last game I ever went to and probably will ever go to at Notre Dame was a Lightning game. And now, for those that don't, they had this huge building program there, so a lot of the places that used to be parking lots close to the stadium are no longer. So if you're just some schlump and don't know how to park in a neighborhood or something, you get fed across the tollway, in which case a bus has to get you back and forth. Now, I don't know if those buses started running. I think a lot of people just wanted to go home and not sit 2 hours. I don't know if that bus got you back across the tollway before the half was ended. But there's a certain common sense, Kevin, that somehow or another, I want to lead you into this question about gambling. There's a certain common sense that I think some people used to have, and now we sort of don't, and money seems to be, you know, the whip that's driving everybody. There was a game, I think, the year before I got there, so 3 years before you got there, where the Irish were whomping up on somebody, and it was, you know, a lot to a little at halftime. So Era met the other coach, and he said, "Hey, look, why don't we just run the ball, and why don't we have a running clock the second half?" And the other coach says, "Fine, I don't want to get that many people hurt." And that's what they did. Now, I don't expect in today's world with the pre-commercials and all that stuff, but, I mean, this Lightning stuff, this is the same thing happened as the game I was at. The break came at... You know, we've got satellites, we've got everything in this world now. Don't you... You would think, Kevin, in our world of somewhat common sense, or at least what I think there is, that if you see that... A big commercial break, because it was a turnover or something, right before they called the thing, just like it did 10 years ago or 15 years ago when I was there. Wouldn't you think that somebody would say, "Hey, there's only 5 minutes left to go in the half. It looks like the storm's coming," to say, "What do you say we buzz through the last 5 minutes, at least make it to halftime?" That thought, if you dropped that thought on these people, Kevin, that would be the biggest fart in church you ever let go. The thought of even doing something like that. Now, I mean,
it's partly the thought, Tom. It's partly too that, and this is just a management style that, you know, that drives me nuts when people, when you do it. People, who's allowed to make that decision? Who's even allowed to, from a network standpoint? You can talk about common sense, but is that something a director, a producer, somebody, or does this have to, do they have to hunt down some network executive and make it happen? There's a lot of places. A totally different example.
Okay, but before you go there, realize what you just said? that the network can charge you to game, not the referee or not the
average. Oh yeah.
That the referee can't say, that somebody can't call down to the referee and say we got lightning here in 10 minutes, and the referee or somebody say, all right, blow through the next two breaks, and see if we can make it to half. Why does it have to go to the network, for God? That I guess that's my point. You just proved my point.
Yeah. Well, and that is, and so you have that issue, and so that, you know, that's a part of it, but it's also, you know, I abhor this as a management approach, and this is why I'm bringing it up. I left my shaving kit in a hotel room in Indianapolis a couple months ago, and I had medication in there that I needed, and that I would have to jump through a lot of hoops. It was a pain medication. It's controlled substance at the time. You know, I don't need it anymore, but so it would not be easy for me to just walk in on Saturday to the pharmacy and say, hey, can you give me four or five of those while I have them send me this thing? So, you know, I call down to the hotel, and the manager's gone until Monday, and nobody there can say, oh yeah, we found it. They did find it. They had it. There was nobody there who could send it to me overnight and charge it to my room without permission of the boss. And I'm sitting there telling him, just do it. Just do it and bill it to my room. And so I had to wait. Now, the boss came in Monday, and he was very accommodating, and he went out of his way at lunchtime to take it out and get it sent to me. But, you know, by then I had spent a lot of time in pain that I didn't need to be.
Well, you could have found somebody that had some extras, was willing to sell them.
Yeah, I probably could have, you know, just gone over to the west side and hung out a little bit. But you get the point. Is nobody allowed? This is the common sense thing that you brought up. Is nobody allowed to exercise common sense? Now, in the case of Saturday's game, they only had a minute and a half left to play. They just bundled it up with halftime. You know, they didn't have the added inconvenience. It would have been moronic for somebody to come out, play the minute and a half, and say, okay, halftime, bands get ready to march.
I think they should have the bands out there in the Lightning with the big tubas. See if the tuba, make an experiment, see if the tuba attracts the Lightning.
Tuba conductive, yes.
were there any UFOs this time?
I don't think so.
Well, that sucks. So then the second half starts, and I'm assuming they were commercialing all the way. Then they got booted off the national feed, right? Where'd they go?
They probably went to Peacock, but you know, I was in St. Louis visiting relatives, so I didn't go searching for that. Besides, all my relatives were watching the Missouri game. I had it on the Xfinity stream. So,
did you think for a second that Indiana was going to spank Illinois to that extent?
Not like that, no.
It was. It's really something.
I thought that had a chance to be a decent game.
I got a gambling question for you. That everybody, you know, the thing that you know, people don't change. And I'll tell you what. One of the best things that ever happened to me, even though I'd read a few of them, when my one of the issues I had when I switched from pre-med to arts and letters economics is you're expected to take 3 semesters of a language. Anybody who's heard me talk on the air knows I got enough trouble with English. The last thing I would be good at is another language, right? So I tried French. That didn't work out so good, which is not good because the girl teaching it, they had a young lady teaching it that was smoking hot, Kevin. This is at Notre Dame. So I had to drop that class because everybody in there had French before. They were all sandbagging except me. So I ended up with Italian. So I sucked through Italian my whole junior year. And finally, I went to the guy. And my only time I ever went to the counselor, and I said, you know, I've played the game. I'm just not good at this, even though I managed to get B's because I think they like me. How can an old Italian couple not like me? So they gave me B's just out of the goodness of their heart. And guy goes, how about taking a semester over at St. Mary's with Dr. Kenvin, who I had already classed with him. He's terrific. How about taking a semester in Greek tragedies? I'll make it sound like it's Greek language, and how's that for a deal? And I go, done. So, but I read all these Greek tragedies.
You didn't know the secret one to take. That was Swahili.
Oh, God. Well, really?
No, I'm serious. I'm serious. Swahili, and it was one of those courses that that you could take because you really didn't learn a lot of language, but you could also take it as like a government class or a history class. So that really tells you how in depth it was in terms of the language training.
Well, it's like Latin. All you did was learn Roman history. Nobody wanted to learn Latin.
Well, when I took it in high school, I actually did a lot of we read a lot of the you know, classic poetry and short stories and things like that in native tongue.
Well, what was the famous first line? Gallia est in Europa. Gaul is in Europe.
Well, I'm thinking I came, I saw, I conquered.
Yeah.
Vani, vidi, vici.
There you go. But in terms of the gambling, we saw the Irish. Matter of fact, one of our guys sent me the thing. I mentioned a little bit a few weeks ago regarding the these outlier point spreads. And one year I was in Vegas years ago, Kevin, and I'm reading this. This is when you had to go to the Stardust to get all the stats for the pros from the week before, and hope, you know, it was gambling. It was essentially right after the Tony Spilotro story, where Chicago had centralized, you know, bookies being able to lay stuff off in Vegas. But so they used to have a guy who wrote a really solid column on gambling, and he was talking about betting on games. He said, "Hey, look, this is how much times have changed. Hey, look, if you want to bet football, find a game that's even." Pretty even. Figure out who you think it's going to win. You might have a feel for it, and bet the team to friggin' win. Don't think that the Irish are going to beat up on you know Sidewash State by 40, because then all of a sudden your bet hinges on how much the coach wants to run it up and how strong the second string really wants to score, because that's not your bet. I mean, why would you do that? Well, now I wonder, since all the coaches seem to know the spread, I'm thinking that those have become pretty good bets, because I think the team, even if, like, you know, if Indiana, just to pick a school, is playing, you know, whatever, Indiana State or someplace, and the spread's 45, I think they're going to cover, because they can. And they know their people have bet on it. And that's a totally different, this is yet another variable. I keep talking about different variables in the market now. With companies that are somehow getting deals with government and blah blah, and who's in with the group and who isn't, and all of a sudden, there's always been defense companies that, you know, obviously were in Dutch with government, but they were never big traders or anything like that. I mean, they were there, but you think this adds another variable, Kevin, that all these coaches know these spreads?
It could, and it could, you know, it could give them impetus to push something home on the last drive of the game or something like that, even if they have a big lead. I think for the most part, you know, some coaches will, some, you know, will be attuned to it. I really think for most people, for most coaches and most players, it's really about next play. It's really about, how I compete. You know, I know there are exceptions, and there have been very public exceptions to that, but the mindset of competitors a little bit different.
What was your first time you got a hint of it? Public perception.
Oh, about public perception?
No, I mean about the fact that it might be going on.
With a coach?
Yeah.
I can't think of an example.
I can, for some reason.
My hat.
How long has DeBar been dead? 30 years? 25? It's going to be a long time.
Yeah, a long time.
He
didn't live very long after he retired.
No, he had horrible prostate cancer. Matter of fact, the story was one player was kind of getting tired of practice, and he sees Bear walking across the field, like, real slow, and mounting the steps to the thing where the coach can see all the players, the tower, whatever they call it. Turns out he had a big bag of ice on each side of his guy parts. And the kid goes, "If he can do that to coaches, I could run another couple sprints," or something along those lines. Anyway, they were up. They were favored by, like, I don't know, 27 or something, this team. So the fourth quarter, they're driving down, and there's like 2 seconds left, and they're up by 25. So he kicks a field goal. And one reporter, who probably got thrashed afterward, said, "Coach, what are you doing kicking a field goal? You had the game won." He goes, "I know the spread was 27, and I know Alabama people bet on Alabama, so I kicked the field goal. What's the problem?" Now, if maybe only the Bear could say something like that, and it didn't immediately hit, you know, YouTube and X and every other damn thing that's out there now. But I remember it. I mean, so it's not new.
He probably did get a phone call from the league saying, "Shut up."
I don't think they ever would give him I think he was untouchable after he was sick and everything. Anyway, he might have.
Yeah, because they don't want that association, period. Even though now, you know, it's part and parcel to the game. Certainly at the time, they were scared to death that gambling would be part of their game.
Why do you think that all of a sudden people have somehow changed? That now the gambling is not going to affect anybody. Nobody's going to be coerced by it. Nobody's going to. Is Illinois the only state that has the law restricting certain kind of bets, or did everybody else pick that up? What, they won't let you pick on, won't you bet on injuries? They won't you bet on, what is it, what's the five other things, Kevin? Anything any individual person can do. You can't all of a sudden have a quick bet on whether a guy makes a field goal or not. Something like that. You can't bet
it's
on.
It's like a George Carlin routine, the seven bets you can't make on football.
Yeah, well, they won't let you make a bet on whether the first play is going to be a pass or a run, because if the coach sees that, he can just call the other. You know, they don't want stuff like that, which is interesting. I don't know, but I once in a while plant my butt next to some guy at the Tripoli that is doing this the entire game, Kevin, and he's crazed at it, and. He can pop his phone open and make a bet in like probably under 10s. I don't know how he gets the right page, the right bet, just what he's thinking, what he does, but he's a magician on this stuff.
He's got the app, man. What more do you need? You think those apps aren't designed to make it really, really easy
I'm assuming they are. I one of these days I'm going to have to ask him, what is the new tax thing? I haven't heard boo about that. About how that's going to restrict people's gambling. I don't see. If you're really into it, how could it not? For what I'm talking about is the new big beautiful bill. That's not what I call it. It's what everybody else calls it. Somehow or another, is restricting. It used to be that you have to pay taxes on gambling wins, okay, because it's considered income. But you could deduct your losses. So in the old days, when you had tickets at the track. If you went out and actually, you know, I think it was $600. You had to fill out a form. Who knows what it is now? So if you won the trifecta for $1,000, you went around and picked up other tickets, saying, "Okay, I won $1,000, but by the way, I lost $500. Here's my tickets, or $200, and the next week I lost $100." So you could deduct one against the other. So now in this current bill, but nobody could ever track. You know, if you had the tickets, you had them. So. And if you won $25,000 on a trifecta and you only went to the track once, you might have trouble weaseling your way through that. But you could always deduct one or the other. So now, if you are crazy at this and bet every week, you could conceivably win during the year $300,000 and lose $300,000. Right, Kevin? If you're betting, you know, $100 here, $100 there, 10 times a day, I mean, you could get there.
More likely you lose $500,000. But
well, but I'm saying let's say you break even. you owe tax on 30G. That's a real number. Or like you say, what if you made 300 and lost 400, so you're 100 down anyway? Well, then I guess you cover it, right? Because you're 90% of 400 is more than the 300. So that you're okay then, tax wise. So. What if you were? I'm thinking this guy I know, Kevin. I'd take the over on $1 million on winning and losing. That's how much he's into it. And we're talking $2,000 here, $3,000 there every day. So I don't see how that doesn't happen. Let's say it's $1 million and $1 million. The guy owes tax on $100,000. There's gonna be a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth at the
end
of the
year. I'm guessing, you know, the real pros, you know, they're all about the numbers anyway. So now this is just another number to factor in there, and they're fine. It's your degenerate gambler who's out of control that's going to be a problem here.
Well, but I mean, I got to believe that in order for them, I mean, for those that may think that the income tax law is what caused people to pay income taxes, I got another thing coming for you. The thing that caused people to pay income taxes is the fact that companies were forced to withhold, right, Kevin? So, at the end of the year, is the government, wherever they happen to be, are they going to be able to grab the entire DraftKings / I don't know, FanDuel, all the records of all the people, and they can say, here's Kevin O'Neill, made a million, lost a million. Where's our 100G times 35%?
Well, does DraftKings have to issue a 1090, whatever it is that they have to do? My guess is, yeah, they probably do.
That's an interesting question. I mean, the this is how weird it was in our industry. When I say industry, the securities industry, and I think most of the people on our listeners are investors. Up until not that long ago, if you shipped in, if the only thing you did at PTI was open up an account, trundle in, you know, $500,000 worth of IBM stock or something that daddy gave you or you bought or whatever, and all of a sudden all you did was sell that here. The thing that RBC or IB would send to the government is that you had income of $500,000. Income. And it was up to you on your form to say, well, I sold it for $500,000, but guess what? I paid $490 for it. So my capital gains, if it's over a year, is on $10,000. It was up to you to fill in the blanks. Well, now that's expanded. It's more of a Dan question than me, my brother. I think now that they actually give the full P&L, where they take into account your base. I know they do on options. And I think on stock they do now as well. So more goes to the government. It used to be only the sell side went, which is even more bizarre, Kevin. You had to make up the fact that, hey, I paid something for it. So I wonder if DraftKings, what iteration they're on, if they just send the winners, or they send the winners and losers, or essentially the whole net. I don't know. I don't know. How would you even know? I guess we could ask somebody, but it's changed with the new bill. I don't know. The reporting requirements. I didn't hear that, did you?
No, but whatever it is, that's just built into the business. So they know, and it's not that hard to do tax reporting. I used to have to do it every year in my banking days. We used to have to cut all the stuff that got sent to the customers, but also all the stuff that got sent to the feds.
Well, yeah, I would not be happy if I made no money, if I actually broke even, which, by the way, is probably pretty tough, right? Since you're paying 11 to 10 every time. You got to be really good to break even in a whole year, I would think, wouldn't you?
Yes.
So if I do it, I don't really want to send the feds a $35,000 check, do you, when I didn't make any dough?
I really don't, but I'm not a better, so I don't pay much attention to it.
Well, that's...
And I'm not a better for a good reason. I do know how much I would be wrong, often I would be wrong.
Yeah. What are you like, a Chicago alderman? Let's tax the strip joints, because I don't go to strip joints. let's tax the people that park downtown, because I got a limousine. That's a Chicago alderman approach, right?
Whatever it is, it works okay for me.
Yeah. Now the latest is what are they going to try and tax? Are they going to they're going to put video pokers in all the restaurants and bars if you want them? Of course, you got to pay big nut for the license. How would you like to be a huge investor in the Bally's Casino and have this thing just come walking over your back?
You just adjust and move on.
Yes.
What else are you supposed to do?
Well, they just dropped a new competitor right down your throat, and the competitor is not a state of Illinois, right? Hey, why should I go to the casino? I'm across the street in a bar playing video poker.
Yeah, so here's your question is, are you just going to play video poker where you didn't before and you're going to bet everything else is, and do as much other gaming as you always would have?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think the...
The people I know who like to gamble, the people I know who go to casinos and all that kind of stuff, they go. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter. There's, you know, it's almost like they go with the attitude that, you know, it's fun even if you lose.
Well, and to a certain point, it is.
Seems to me losing would not be fun at all.
I as somebody who... I mean, you know, Kevin, I play poker two nights a week at Notre Dame with all those guys. Goose and Brew and that group. And
I was never a card player either, so I'm the one in my family who's not.
It's all my family did was play cards. I'm going to say I was a reasonable poker player at age 8 or 9. That's all we did. 500 Rummy, Gin Rummy, you name it. If nobody watched the TV, what are we doing? We got time for a game of Gin Rummy? Let's play. I was playing with my grandmother when I was 10. I mean, it was just what you did in those days. I mean, nobody watched daytime TV or anything like that. If your grandfather was there, you got out the checkerboard. I mean, it was just a different world. I don't know if it was better or worse. It was just different.
Well, my work friends, if we get together, you know, or go to somebody's house, out come the cards.
Yeah.
I say, hey, I know the games, everybody. I know how to play. I know the strategy. Just don't enjoy them. So have fun.
I always did. Plus, I was reasonably good at it. But I would go to Vegas. Going to Vegas is
when you get Mike Murphy back on.
You think Mike likes to play cards?
A little.
Mike had come to my house for like Thanksgiving, and all of a sudden there he was in my spot playing gin rummy with my grandmother, and she loved Mike just because he played cards with her. Maybe she didn't know him that well. Nah, we love Mike too, but yeah. She loved Mike. He was by far her favorite of all my school friends because he played cards with her. But you know, when I went to Vegas, it was a totally different world. Your buddy Dak Doherty dragged me to Vegas. He goes, hey, we're going to Vegas. I go, well, what do you mean? He goes, you're coming with me. I got the two tickets. I called 1-800-SODA-POP. It's $150 round trip, and we're staying at some god-awful place, the Flamingo Capri, and we're going. Okay, and off we went. And, you know, I of course, immediately got Beat the Dealer, the book, and read all about blackjack and how to play it and so forth. But it was so different, Kevin. You didn't have ATMs, right? So basically, you know, I was doing pretty good at the time. So I'd bring $2,000, right? And I was never going to lose $2,000 because if I lost two times in a row, I said, screw it, let's go to a show. So I'd put up $200 each time, and I would never dig. So if I lost the $200, I'd say, oh, that was a bad shot. Most of the time, I, you know, came away with my $200, or once in a while, I won pretty good. It's strange it actually happens. So, especially when you're using the same strategy and you're supposed to be like 50-50. Gambling doesn't work like that. It's all about the handle. We could go into that some other time, but the odds get better the more money that's in the game, the handle. You know what that means, obviously. Mm-hmm. The handle is the amount of money bet in a certain period of time. So as you move up the chain, like blackjack, if you know what you're doing, you can get it close to 50-50. Craps is damn near 50-50. It's right on the cusp. You say, okay, how can craps be such good? Because the handle is dramatic. How much money is on the table? You could have a crap table where there's $10,000 out there. So 1% every roll of the dice is like a real lot of dough. But you're not going to be 1% in some game that every time... You're not going to be 1% in Keno, where you spend the thing every half hour, right? That's going to be 10% place makes. So it's all about the hand. That's why craps... Now, on the other side of it, you may think, okay, Kevin, you're going to go play craps. It's basically 50-50. I'm getting a craps lesson here on the show. It's basically 50-50. You're going to walk in there with $100, and I'm going to bet 5 hours. I don't think you can find a 5 hour crap table now. You're going to say, I'm going to win one, I'm going to lose one, and I'll be here 15 drinks later, 4 hours from now, I'm still going to have part of my $100. That's not the way it works, Buffalo Breath. Because first thing that happens is if you bet five, the only even money bet in Vegas is now they throw an eight, that becomes your point. You can make an even money bet on the 8, which will pay 6 to 5. So now you put $10 behind the line, so now you got 15 out there. So then you put another $5 on the come line, which means it's starting over for you. Somebody throws a 5. Now that pays 3-2 behind the line. Okay, and you bet another $10. Then another $5, and then the next number is 9. Now it's taken a minute, and instead of betting $5 a shot, you got $45 on the table. Then the guy throws a 7, and the big shovel comes, and your $45 is gone, and you go, wait a minute, I've been here 2 minutes, and I'm down 45. What happened to this $5 a shot that I'm going to be here all night? Now I haven't got my first drink, right? So it's all about the handle. But the point was, I went out there with my dough with a return ticket. And this is money that I made, didn't want to lose. But if I lost $300-$400, you know what? So what? I had a nice time, and not so what, because you always want to win. And I came home. Basically, they booted my ass back on the plane, and away I came. I was no harm to Vegas. I was no harm to anybody. You know, contrast that with the Pepe's out where Audrey and I go once in a while, where a couple of the waitresses every day make their maybe $100. And on the way out, blow 50 on the video poker machine because they have no idea what even the odds are. They think they actually can win. Oh, it's nowhere near a 50% like a crap game, or it's nowhere near the almost 50% the blackjack table with half-ass me counting cards. So it's not even close. And this is money that they need for the kids. It's just different. And I, as much as I love to gamble, I've never liked it this way. I don't like the lottery where I walk in and see 15 people buying $35 scratch-offs that couldn't, if you on their best day, couldn't come close to what the odds are they're buying. I just don't like it, Kevin. Maybe I'm too nice to people. Maybe I know to a fault, but I don't like it. It's not the same, I don't think. Just saying.
I agree. I do wholeheartedly agree. And you know what can you say? This is why I'm not a gambler, because I'm, you know, I realize that I'm not. It's not that I'm not good at it or anything like that, you know, or couldn't be. It's just that I realized that you just ain't going to win, you know.
I've seen people
dedicating their life to winning, or unless you want to get a card count, you know, become a card counter and get, you know, and risk, you know, getting roughed up every now and then.
Well, it's pretty hard to count when there's 6 decks. But I've seen a crap game where one lady at noon, we're doing a show out there, and I just went to the casino for a bit, you know, at lunchtime because I wasn't hungry. And this lady rolled the bones. She was 20 minutes, Kevin. That table made so much dough. They had to go get more cash. You would never think, and nobody's been able, no theorist has ever been able to figure out why there's such a streak thing involved in gambling. You would think you'd win one, lose one, win one, lose one. Somehow it doesn't work that way. This lady, everybody made money. These people were laughing. They were making so much. She probably won, I don't know, whatever point you made, she made. And then all of a sudden, when all the points were made, and then she finally, you know, threw the 7 you get to keep going unless you throw the 7. So she just kept going, and guys were putting, like, you know, money on the hard, you know what the hard 12 is. Well, only 1-12, but you can put $10 on the 6 and 6, and it pays, I don't know, 25-30 to 1 or something. Some guy'd throw $10 on the hard 6. She'd roll him 2 6s and then keep going for the other guys. I mean, everybody put money anywhere. This lady basically graced for 20 minutes. But the guy, the pit boss guys are like, we got to get some more dough. I've never seen that before or since, but I've seen it happen. I mean, you wonder how the hell. What are the odds of that? Of not crapping out for like 20 minutes, but it happens. I mean, it's, you know, you see the dealer, all of a sudden he'll bust six hands in a row, and then he gets a blackjack 4 hands in a row. I mean, it really is the streakiness. I always was marveled at, because statistically, I don't know where it comes from. But anyway, do we have our professors?
Yeah, you got Russell, so I'm going to turn you over to Russell, because I have an appointment in a little while, so I'm going to head out to that, and you can talk about the streakiness of the market instead of the streakiness.
Without a doubt. You think Russell's coming to us from a blackjack table somewhere?
He probably is.
I take cards And I'll do it, but I'll get up about $500 and then I just walk away.
Well, you have to, because you can't be.
Yeah, I just and the only reason I got to meet Ed Thorpe a while back, about a decade ago.
By the way, you're supposed to get him on the show.
Yeah. So I for people who don't know, he's a pretty big get. I think we gave him a nice five-figure number to come speak at a risk management conference when I was at SIBO.
Well, he's an option genius. He's an option genius.
Yeah, and then I got to when I was at SIBO, I would do the interviews of people at risk management. So I got to interview him one-on-one and then hand him off to the people at Bloomberg Radio. But during the handoff, I got to, I got to slip in a personal question with him. And I tried to ask him what he was doing in the market at the time. And he just said, "I'm always looking where nobody else is looking." That was so unhelpful. actually, it wasn't unhelpful because I was teaching fixed income last night, and one of the bullet points I really like in the lecture that I was giving last night was the way that you really profit in the market is doing things that aren't already priced in. And what I used for the example in that is interest rates got cut last week, but mortgage rates didn't get cut at all. And people are questioning that one, and that's because it was already priced in by the market. You can't really make money if you just trade things that are pretty much already priced in by the market.
How do you fight the mentality of an entire, I'm going to say, 40 years of non-learning that the Fed also controls long-term rates when they obviously do not?
Oh, they do. No, they do. They can. If you buy and sell in that market and you're big enough, you can have control over that.
Well, I was going to say, the only time they ever did, and look where it got us, was essentially buying $7 trillion worth of long-term stuff where you couldn't fight against them.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, nobody in 1992 would have ever dreamed that would happen.
Right.
Where you would have an inflation rate of 8 or 9, whatever we got to, and your long-term rates are going to be 2, because God help you, if you sold a long-term bond, the Fed bought it and shoved it right where the sun don't shine.
Yeah. Right. So, and that's definitely had a negative impact on market structure.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's... Well, plus you have... stuff going on, and again, none of this stuff is new. I mean, mm-hmm. when I say something like this, I'm taking, a shot at administration,
mm-hmm.
which I am, but it's the same shot I took at the Biden administration, because it seems like every administration now is pushing a little further into an area that I don't want them to go, but they're not asking me. You can't. When you have the FCC guy on the TV, David Faber asked him, "Does that mean if you have a license, we got to run a script by you before we talk?" And the guy said something to the effect, "Well, we're not there yet," or something along those lines. Well, I know that the censorship in the Biden administration and the first Trump administration regarding COVID was pretty out of control. Now, this is just the next step. But at some point, mm-hmm. when does somebody say, "Wait a minute, this is like way too far"? And I'm not so sure the current group of people, young people, midlife people, kind of see where this is going. And you can't say that government has never been up, or companies have never been up the ass of government. All you got to do is look at the history of, Eisenhower, the military-industrial complex. But now it's moved to a point where, if you don't have your nose up the ass of government in areas other than defense, I mean, who made the best call of the year on Oracle, for God's sake? Wayne and Andrew. I said, mm-hmm. Why is this Oracle going up this much? And Wayne said, because Ellison's kid and Trump's kid are two peas in a pod. And Oracle's going to end up smelling like a rose. And sure enough, they're going to get control of X, pretty much. not X. TikTok. Sorry.
TikTok. Yeah.
And they ended up with. What else did they end up with? Was some other thing, and they.
Well, Oracle and they made a move into supplying toward AI. So yeah. I know that was, but I don't know if that, you know.
Well, he claims that one of the biggest buyers of this is the government, with all the stuff they want to get down on people, all the facial recognition. Well, that's what Oracle mm-hmm. does. They store all that stuff because they're going to end up with a contract in every one of these areas. And sure enough, the stock's up a lot higher, and they were right. I mean, and that mm-hmm. that was something I would never have even thought about 10 years ago in investing. Would you? I mean, it's
no.
another variable.
No.
I'm not saying right, wrong, or whatever. It's another variable now.
It's just how things have emerged. I guess evolved.
And the fact is, is there anybody around? Is there a Washington or a Lincoln? And I'm not saying we're there yet. Is somebody someplace going to say, "Wait a minute, guys, we're way too far. We got to stop this. This is not America. This is something."
The problem is if you try to step up and do something like that, you're going to get shouted down by both sides.
Yeah. Well.
You know, so there's no opportunity to there's no opening in there to try to get that point across. It's impossible to try and get that point across.
Well, in the last month,
and
two people
and you bring the censorship thing that Google is talking about. I've seen it because you know I focus a lot on what's going on China, and there are two or three very critical China channels on YouTube that I get unsubscribed to they stop showing up in my feed, and I have mysteriously been unsubscribed to China Uncensored. I've had to subscribe 5 times in the past year. You can't tell me that that's just happening by accident.
Well, there's two,
and that the Chinese and you talk about our companies needing to be working closely with our government. If you want to do anything over in China, you've got it. You're basically coming and bowing and kissing the ring and everything.
Well, so I mean, that's the playbook.
It's not just our government. It's and I don't think our government is as bad as some of the other ones with that stuff, but our government shouldn't be involved in that stuff at all.
I mean,
the filter that big tech has as far as information goes, you can still get around it, but you really got to make a big effort to get around it.
Well,
it's almost like it's impossible to behave in the way that you want to behave. You know, I'd like to only buy American stuff, and you know that becomes pretty difficult. I do the best that I can around that one, and you know, just getting information. There's so much. You know, they're just you don't really know what's true anymore.
Well, you know what you just Matty Weber mm-hmm. would have said years ago. No. You know what you're gonna fall victim to here. This is way back when we first started the show, and
mm-hmm.
I was talking about an interview with somebody like you, somebody terrific, and then I was said, man, I listened to somebody on TV yesterday, and they had a really good guest, and God, they didn't. There's a couple of questions, and Matty says, Chief, you got to understand one thing: you weren't trained to be an announcer on TV. You just do this, and you're an inquisitive guy. So you mm-hmm. you do something. You don't show up with Russell with your 7 questions. And if one of his answers was, by the way, we just bombed Tokyo, that you go right to the next question. You actually listen to the answer and formulate a new question. Nobody mm-hmm. does that. Nobody's trained to do that. Nobody's allowed to do that. And if you did it, they'd throw you off the air. Now, what you just said, I don't even know if you know you said it. You said, if now you actually are a proponent of free speech and saying this is the way people died for this here, this is what sets us apart, all of a sudden you're now a victim. They're going to come after you. You're a target for even saying that this is the way I should be able to. We've had in the last month, we've had two terrific potential guests on the show that have been told by their bosses they can't come out.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I'm not overly shocked, but
no, I don't think you are.
It has nothing to do with the because I got penalty box.
No, don't go there. Just I'm saying. Yeah, this is
no, because I mean I've seen it personally.
Yeah, I'm saying. So, but yeah,
I've seen it personally.
This Kimmel thing. Mm-hmm. I never really watched the guy. But by that time, I'm asleep. The time I get up in the morning, but now he's back on the air. Now the question is, what does the leash look like? There's got to be one.
I don't know. I didn't watch. I never watched. I haven't watched him since he was on the Man Show.
Yeah, but I don't. It's not my. I mean? It's not so my time.
I mean, that's my. You know, I haven't watched. Letterman was probably the last person that I watched. Like that, so I don't know what he said last night.
Well, I'm just saying what are the chains for him coming back on? Did the station negotiate it with the government?
Mm-hmm.
Did they negotiate it with the head of the FCC? That's the thing that I worry about.
Yeah, my understanding, and everybody keeps saying that Trump told them to kick him off. I think it was the two TV station groups that really were the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, but you don't know what the pressure was. Nobody knows. I mean, nobody knows.
I don't think it's as simple as Trump called up and said, "Take that guy off."
No, the FCC guy is clearly in this. If you've got a license, you better say what I want you to say. I mean, he said that on CBC the other day. For God's sake, it's not like I'm making that up. Maybe right. With David Faber, I can't believe he had the balls to say, "Does that mean we got to run a script by you?" And the guy goes, "Well, something about we're not there yet, or no, it's not that bad, or something along those lines." He didn't say like never. He didn't say never. He just said like not now or something along those lines. But I mean, I got to believe
not
that,
yet.
Yeah, not so. Yet. And so I mean, I don't know what. So okay, he's back on now. What he can't make any political comment. He can't.
Oh, I have no idea. I assume that he will be if something as extreme as somebody being killed comes up, he'll probably think twice about what he says about it. But I'm sure he'll stay politically where he's been all along. He'll just make sure he doesn't say something that's in extremely bad taste.
Well, the only thing I've said at all about this dude, and I will say this, I probably disagree with a lot of what he said, but as an American, the dude was out there talking to people. Whether the beliefs match mine or not, he's my kind of guy. I mean, he's not afraid to say what he thinks and debate people. I mean, I hope I'm sort of the same way. The only thing I ever said, not about him personally, but about maybe 31-year-old males in general, is we all think we're immortal at that age. And some of the comments he made about guns, saying, well, if the wrong person gets shot every now and then is a small price to pay, okay, well, that's fine unless it's you. That's the only thing I ever said. But I would say that about anybody. It's like I would say that about if somebody goes, and I hear this all the time, man, I love driving 85 miles an hour. You know, why would anybody drive slower? I got things to do. Okay, well, but if it means that the person who drives 85 only ever runs into somebody else going 85, I guess I'll roll with it. But that's not the way it works. You know, I mean, so I'm sure in his mind, it's some people are going to die if everybody drives 85, but it'll never be me. But that would just be a 31-year-old male all over the place, right? I mean, that's just the way people are when the testosterone's flowing, right? It'll never be me. But it's going to be somebody, right? Just saying, that's the only criticism I ever made of the guy. I'm kind of hung up a little bit though. Why I'm hung up on this, I don't know, Russell, and I don't go down this road too much. Why do people keep bashing, kind of gays and people like that? I mean, if you're God loving, somebody made them like that. Nobody chooses whether they're gay or not, do they? I mean,
no.
So what's I don't see where religion is a
part
of...
Well, you know what? That I don't know. My sister is a lesbian, and we've had a lot of talks about this. But my sister also is not in favor of gay marriage, even though she's gay.
Okay.
So she's got, you know, so we've talked about that before, about, you know, the nature versus nurture type thing.
Yeah.
I think there are, you know, I think I've got great students. I know that this, but I know I have great students that are naturally very smart people. And I have great students that were brought up in households where they sat at the kitchen table and did homework together 2 hours every night, which sure wasn't my household. So, you know, one comes from one area, one comes from another. So I do think that there's a combination of people that choose that is their sexual orientation, that there is some choice around it. You know, and for some people, not for every, I think they're a combination of both.
Well, I'm going to allow this.
And talking to my sister and her friends about this, we've had these discussions. You know, they'll actually say, yeah, you're, you know, that person, is, you know, was born this way and some other just kind of became this way. I've heard that. So I'm just repeating things that other people have said there.
Well, I'm going to allow my two cents in, and then let's change the subject because Dr. J and I, back in the day,
mm-hmm.
coached the girls softball team from the Board of Trade and the CBOE.
Mm-hmm.
And you know some of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And Jan's like, hey, this is back when, you know, you got some action sometimes. And he goes, geez, we're not getting any action. What kind of deal is this? And I'm like, I said, Jan.
Oh, my gosh.
There's you know, not that we were after any of these girls or not, but it just wasn't the normal thing you would expect. I mean, but there weren't guys showing up after the game and so forth like normally you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Jan, I think, you know, most of the girls here are gay. And as I got to know more of them, and I mean, you've known me long enough, does anybody not want to tell me their story? I mean, I'm just a guy.
You seem to extract that.
And every single one of them had some horrible event when they were like 11, 12 years old with an uncle, a grandfather, a neighbor, or some just nasty stuff where mm-hmm. they just didn't want any part of a guy ever again. And
you just described my sister.
How does anybody say that somehow that's, I mean, it's, I don't know what to think about it. How can I criticize that?
I mean, I can't.
And so I mean, you got to be careful when you start criticizing people. Mm-hmm. What is it, you know, walk a mile in the other guy's shoes before you criticize him? Who's the one who said that? And I try and be like that. And I think mm-hmm. most of the people on the show, as much as we fight back and forth, feel the same way. I mean, wait a minute. What if that happened to somebody and they don't want any guys around them again? Well, gee, maybe I'd feel the same way if it was me, right? I mean, duh.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be careful before you start lobbing stones at people.
Exactly. I mean, that's trauma is a big reason that people are the way that they are when you don't understand them, and you know that it's that there is part of their way of dealing with it.
We had a million kids in the neighborhood. Once in a while, mm-hmm. there'd be a sleepover somewhere, and. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know. I was young. I come back, and my mother would always give me the third degree. Oh, where'd you guys stay? How many people were there? What'd you have? We had pot, potato chips, blah, blah, blah. I bet
you understand why, huh?
Well, and then she'd say, who came downstairs? Well, Mrs. Smith came down with cookies and blah, blah, blah. Where was Mr. Smith? You ever see him? No. He stayed upstairs. You never even saw him. Okay. Now that I'm older, I know what the questioning was all about.
Exactly.
And at the time, I had no idea what she was talking about, you know. But now, but I never saw any of that in my neighborhood. Any of that,
mm-mm.
you know. But that's not every neighborhood, you know. It's just we were lucky in a lot of ways, Russell. I mean, or at least I was.
Yeah.
I don't know. I never had anybody in the Catholic Church a problem with me. You know, whether they knew my parents were watching or they picked on somebody, or maybe there's some other kind of a. You know, a skill set or whatever somebody else has that makes them vulnerable that somehow mm-hmm. I didn't have, but I was never like some big tough guy or anything. I mean, I never saw any of that And yet,
yeah, you probably were more protected by your parents than you realize.
Maybe. Yeah. What do you say we go to break it and talk about the market?
Sure.
Crazy stuff. S&P futures up 10. NASDAQ futures up 52. Gold keeps going up. And we're going to talk a little bit about the dollar. And why does this China market keep going up every day? And why doesn't Hang Seng match this
thing? I don't know, man.
Well, when we come back, let's talk about it. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and OPEC Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. We got Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 10. NASDAQ futures up 55. Yesterday we had the first down day we've had in a while. Just so if you weren't watching, the Dow was down 88. Not much there. S&P's down 36, and the NASDAQ was down 215. But today we're bouncing, as you know. Oracle came out. Oracle is actually down 7, even though not the Oracle. Micron. Micron is down 1.5. Even though they came out with earnings and stuff that kind of reassured people. We did not do a earnings spread in there, and if you hear a sound of me slap myself in the head, the thing didn't move. It would have been a nice play, but it was too expensive. I'd like to do some earnings plays, but I actually thought the straddle in there was a little cheap. It turns out the straddle was very well priced. But duh. In Asia, Nikkei, which reopened, it was Sports Day the other day, up 136.3%. Hang Seng up 359. This thing's been on a tear. 1.4%, and Russell's going to tell us why. It actually has dragged the Shanghai with him today, up 31.8%. In Europe, DAX up 36.1%, FTSE down 15.1%, CAC around down 56.7%. So European stocks slide after Fed's Powell says stocks highly valued. Is that the same as irrational exuberance with the Greenspan? Same sort of thing, I guess. Bonds, up 1 basis point, 4.13. It's a 10-year. The Bund unchanged at 2.74. Oil. Wow, we got a rally today. Up 87.5 cents at 64.26 as it continues to fly back and forth from 62 to 64.5. We'll see if it breaks out here, if it goes right back down like it has. Brent up 86 cents, 68.49. Gold down 15 bucks, 3,800. Still trying to stay above 3,800, which is higher than I ever thought I'd see it. Silver down 24 cents, 44.36. Foreign exchange. Dollar 117, or euros 117.47. That's higher than it was. It was 115.5 a few weeks ago. British pound 135. The trade here has really been the pound versus the euro. The pound is decreased versus the euro, not so much versus the dollar. We'll get an opinion on that, Mark Russell, as well. Crypto 1300-113-054. Andrew, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubs lose again.
Yes, they do. It is Wednesday, September 24th here in Chicago, 7:33. Yep, the Cubs lose to the Mets, 9-7. Sox lose as well, 3-2, now to the Yankees. But the Diamondbacks won. They won 5-4. Didn't write down who they were playing against here. But I did write down Chicago weather. It's currently 66 degrees. It's going to be a little bit cloudy and breezy throughout our morning, but it's going to get a little warmer. We're going to get some more sunshine throughout the day. We're going to have a high of 70 throughout the rest of the week. It's going to be warming up. This is going to be the coldest we're going to have for a while. Currently in Phoenix, it is 81 degrees. We got partly cloudy skies. Today, they're going to tie a record heat of, actually just from last year, from 2024, tying to the record heat of 108. It says here a warning, scorching sunshine.
They got to be over that in end of September, for God's sake.
Yeah, it is looking pretty bad out there today. So, and finally, not looking much better, Chicago traffic. Things are heavy and delayed on nearly every inbound expressway. Only major accident to report is inbound on the Eisenhower. That's right before First Avenue. Other than that, it's kind of business as usual. But again, things might take a while coming in. Back to you, Chief.
Russell, out of all the questions I said I was going to ask you, which one do you want to answer first?
I don't know. China, I don't get it. There, move on.
I have a question.
I've had a hell of a time with that one. I think what continues to happen with China is they just keep pumping money into the system to prop it up.
How do you fight that? I mean, obviously we're doing that here too, but I mean, everybody's doing it.
Yeah, no, not like there.
Okay.
Like there, they. The thing is, they can. If you put money in a savings account, which is kind of forced there, it goes right back to the government in the form of government debt. And you don't even, and the yield on the government debt is like a 0.5% to 1%. So your savings options over there are terrible, and the government is basically just reusing your money over and over again.
Well, I'm going to ask you a historical question and try and tie it into China a little bit. Right now, you know, here we assume we always have the ability of the Fed to flip money back and forth into the money supply and so forth. And if you were to have asked the people at the University of Chicago what caused the Great Depression, and they're all, you know, serious monetarists, they would say it wasn't the crash. It was the, somewhere between, what was it, 30 and 32, the money supply dropped by 20 or 22% or something. Something along those lines. And now the reason why that happened is because banks closed and people just couldn't get their money. Duh.
Right.
And the implied solution always was that if the Fed would have just pumped money into the system, that wouldn't have happened. Now, I'm not saying it wouldn't have helped a little bit, but first of all, two questions. If you didn't get it back to the people who lost it and just poured it in for regular people and goosed up the inflation rate, well, we had a serious deflation, but... The second question is, you didn't have any kind of bond inventory really out there.
No.
So how could you buy enough bond inventory which didn't exist to replace 20% of the money in the country? So my two questions were, A, how could they have done it, and just in terms of the current things you can do? And by the way, if you didn't get money back to Russell's great-grandmother in the bank, you didn't help her, you might have made it worse. So my question to you is, how exactly... the Chinese, which don't have a worldwide currency like we do, how exactly are they pouring money into the system? They're just buying any kind of crap they can and making the money up, or what?
Yeah.
But, I mean, what does that do to their exchange rate?
It doesn't do anything because it's controlled. That's not saying that it's accurate. It just means that it's controlled.
But we go back to the Charles de Gaulle thing when we still said our money, our dollar was pegged $35 to the ounce, and De Gaulle kept showing up with a ship with a big boatload of dollars and saying, "Give us now." What happens to me if I'm an investor over there, and they owe me $1 million, and they're pouring money into the system? Well, the $1 million they're paying me tomorrow, if they go, "Here you go, Chief. Here's your mill." What can I buy in China for the mill? Like half what he could have a month ago, or what?
Well, they won't let you take the money out. Chief.
Okay, all right.
I mean, that really is when you're like, how are they able to... You can't take the money out. I know I know somebody that did some consulting work with one of the exchanges over there, and when it was time to get paid at the very end, they gave him an envelope with U.S. cash in it.
Oh, okay.
And it was $5,000. But they gave him, because it was so difficult. And this is an exchange.
I hope it was in Benjamins and not like fives or something.
No. It was in hundreds. It was really crisp. He even said that he was a little worried that maybe they had printed him in the back room.
I would have been.
but no, he actually, we were talking about this on somebody that I went to a conference with, and we were in the car together for a couple hours, and I was like, you know, what was it really like doing business with those people? And he told me this story about at the very end when it was time for him to leave and they were doing the wrap up. He said, well, you know, do I invoice you or whatever? Blah, blah. And I said, no, just wait here. And he had to wait like 30 minutes, but then they came with an envelope and it had, you know, $50, $100 bills in it. And say, here, now you are paid. But that, I think that really has to do with the currency controls, that it was so much easier for them to do that than to go through all of the hoops that they would have to go to wire $5,000 out of the country.
Did he bring them to a bank and see if they were good first before he spent them?
No, he brought them back. He brought them back, and they did you. They were spendable. So.
God.
Yeah.
All right. So let me ask you,
loop back to the China thing. You know, you're like, how? Well, it's because it's such a tightly controlled environment on every aspect of your life that it's, you know, the only way that you can really get money out of China is to buy an asset. You can't. You know, you have to transfer the money for a reason. And it's why there are neighborhoods in Vancouver that have a bunch of empty houses that aren't being taken care of, because that's how people are getting their money out of China. They're buying property in Canada and things like that. Yeah. So, but that's why the reason that that they can do whatever they want internally is because there are so many controls with respect to what they do around the world. And how they interact with everybody around the world, especially with transferring money back and forth.
Well, let me give two opposites.
Or really, just transferring money to them.
Well, just so
getting it out, that's another story.
Well, to make it easier to understand for the listeners, because this is pretty complicated stuff. I'll give two ends of the spectrum. On our end, you know, assuming we can get some cooperation from Europe, Britain, and Japan, if we pour money into the system, and sort of they do as well, we all of us together, can sort of gloss over budget deficits. We can devalue the part of the money which helps rich people, doesn't help other people necessarily.
Right.
Because we can do that because the four of us are essentially the big dogs. If you contrast that with Turkey, or Argentina, or even the Weimar, if you want to go back that far. We don't have to go back that far. So just talk about Turkey today. They double their money supply or triple it.
Mm-hmm.
In their currency, the properties in the stock market for sure goes right to the moon. But if you price their stock market in terms of dollars, it hasn't gone anywhere. But if you price it in terms of the Turkish, whatever the damn thing is, the lira or something, it's to the moon. Same way with Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't get anywhere, because if you invested in it in dollars 2 years ago before it went up, or 3 years ago, and now you do the conversion back, you haven't made a dime. All right, so that's at one end, they're kind of stuck because they're in their own currency, and there's an exchange rate which equates all this together. Now, on our end, we're big enough where we don't worry about it till maybe we have to worry about it, and I think we're getting close. Where along that scale is China? They're somewhere in the middle, and I don't. That's the part I don't really understand. How do you be in the middle on that one? I mean, they sort of are, though.
Yeah, no, they. That's where they're gonna. And I don't know what the comeuppance is going to be. I really don't. Is it going to reach a point where they can't buy anything from outside anymore, or the whole way, you know, the whole way that the China engine works is they make a bunch of cheap crap and we buy it from them, and then they buy less from us. But you know, we're buying less of that cheap crap, And so the flow of our currency to them is dissipating. You know, eventually, does that catch up with them?
Well, we're sort of burying our soybean farmers because they're not buying any soybeans.
I almost feel like I know we, you know, and I'm probably giving him more credit than he deserves. But you know, Reagan is credited, and there were a lot of other forces there, but Reagan, timing-wise, just happened to be in the right place at the right time and was able to kind of spin the Soviet Union into you know, whatever form they are now and free up a lot of countries that were under their sphere of influence. A part of me wonders if, you know, messing with China like we are on a business end will eventually result in them not you know, not being able to compete business wise around the world, and it's kind of, and this is a way that we go about defeating them, is we cut off or make it more difficult for them to acquire dollars and other currencies, which will, you know, which basically puts a little fly in the ointment of how things work for China.
I wouldn't if I were you go give a speech saying what you just said in any of the farm communities right now that are wondering.
No, I know, and I know that the food situation, because that's something that they do buy from us, but there aren't. I know that they can go to Brazil, which is great, but you know, there's only so much food in the world, and they can't produce it for themselves at all.
You're right.
And it's one of those things. It's, you know, it's much like the Europeans having to buy energy from Russia to maintain their style, you know, their way of life. They don't want to do it, but they got to do it. China's got to buy food from us. You don't want 600 million starving people. Starving people don't act rationally, and you can.
We don't want 20 million.
I don't care how big your army is. And that 600 million is the number of people that pretty much live in poverty over there.
But we don't want 20 million starving farmers here, though, either.
No, we don't. But I'm telling you, I think that's how we're going to go about defeating them. And our situation will be fine with or without China as a customer.
I
do believe that.
I'd be careful what cities you said that in.
Oh, I know. I know.
Yeah, I mean, you're in Indiana. You get it.
Yeah, no, I spend a lot of you know, you can talk to Dr. Ademia back about this next week, because I'm going to be on a plane. But you know, she works at probably the top agricultural school in the world.
Yep.
At Purdue. So, you know,
they're
a big deal down there.
They're all. There's a lot of them that are really good at that, though. Isn't Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois, Purdue? Purdue might be the best one, but all these land-grant schools all were given the property with that stipulation, right, that they helped agriculture.
That's part of what they're supposed to do. Yeah, absolutely. That's why my school, that Oklahoma A&M, that's what they were initially established with, the land-grant was for agriculture and manufacturing. But Purdue, I mean, if you drive, even if you go with 20 miles within Purdue, you're going to go by a farm that's got a big Purdue sign in it, that they're doing something.
You know, now that you've
it's kind of cool. She actually, the place, I should let her talk about this, but she took my.
Well, she also wants
daughter.
To talk a little bit about the Vietnam era, I know.
Yeah. They've got a restaurant on campus that's run by the school that she's in. All the food comes from their farms.
Oh, good for them.
And it's all prepared. Yeah, it's like, and they serve different things depending on what's going on seasonally. But yeah, Purdue is great at that. And I would never bring, you know, up that you guys are going to have to suffer, et cetera. But I don't think, I do believe that we can continue to, you know.
Well, it's a question of
continue to be an agricultural leader without China necessarily without having to have China as a customer.
But
Brazil can only do so much for them.
But somewhere along the line, it comes down to communication. Mm-hmm. And people feel that they, I use the term jobbed. People, I mean, we had this article I was reading having to do, and this is not a, people thought, because they were told back in the day by, you know, the the constant communication stream out White House that there would be a serious deal with China by now. It was going to be, what, 2 weeks? Anybody could do it or help Trump or something.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden,
and we're still fighting. And you know what China's doing is they're playing the long game because they know, regardless of what happens in the world, Trump's gone in 3.5 years.
You're sure about that?
Oh, come on now. I'm not going to address that. It's in the Constitution. He's not going to run again. He's not going to run again.
The fact that you are sure about it makes me feel good.
Okay, he's just not going to run again. If anything, age is starting to poke that bear. And in 3 years, I'm not going to say he's going to be in as bad a shape as Biden was at the end of his administration, but I
don't. Well, it's kind of going down that road, but I hope not.
He's starting to deteriorate. It happens to everybody. I'm starting to deteriorate. I am.
Oh, come on. You're not.
No, I am.
You ran a marathon last week. Your best time ever.
I can barely walk down the street and back. God. So, go ahead.
But it comes down to communication. I really want to get into this money management stuff because I need somewhat of an answer because if you would have told people, by the way, it looks to me like you're not going to have a Chinese customer for the next year or two, or something. Mm-hmm. Don't count on it. The fact is, we've got a bumper soybean crop because people were told. Yeah. We're going to have this deal in place in like a week or two or a month or something. I mean, this is just the fact.
Yeah,
so now we have a bunch of people that essentially, and I'm not saying a deal with China is easy at all. I'm with you on that. But
they don't want it to. What China wants to do is probably the biggest disadvantage that the United States of America has in the world is. Is that our leadership turns over. I think, I do think that we shouldn't change that because it's a global disadvantage. But I do think that they look at that and Putin and Xi, they're meeting and they're like, how can we stretch all this crap out for the next, 3 or 4 years the way the United States is? We may get to deal with that AOC chick in 3.5 years, and boy, will that be easy in their minds. I'm not saying, but I think that's what their mentality is. If they don't necessarily like, who they're having to deal with in the U.S., it's gonna change in 8 years at the most. And 8 years, that's a drop in the bucket for somebody like Xi or Putin who've been in power for decades.
Putin's going to be 108 years or something. But you realize what you just said?
What?
If you played it back and you had your students comment on it, you would think, wouldn't you think, Lawrence, you would think that in our society, which, when I was growing up, I honestly always felt this way. I might have been some naive kid. But I don't care really if Trump and Kamala Harris fight back and forth on some tax thing or something. You would think that, and this is the way it was, Russell. You're a little younger than me with the World War II generation.
Oh yeah, they would work together. And I was thinking that in the back of my mind, I was thinking, that we're so divided now, and people see it globally. We were running against it. Nixon and Kennedy ran against each other. Kennedy beat Nixon, and rumor is Kennedy was offering Nixon a spot in the White House because of his experience.
They were good friends.
Even as recently as Bob Dole and Bill Clinton,
yeah,
at one of the debates, they even said, look, we get along personally, we just disagree. That might be the last time that it was,
care necessarily if people can fight cats and dogs over a tax bill. Mm-hmm. But you would think, okay, let's change the subject. Let's talk about Russia and China and where we're going to be in 10 years. I honestly can't imagine, Russell, at my age and my upbringing, that you and I can fight about God knows what. But if we're sitting down going, okay, let's talk about the future of the University of Indiana, I would think that all the other stuff should drop off, and we should be able to agree, not that the care, I mean, and on these subjects, people on both sides of the aisle should be able to get in the same room and come to the same conclusion that we can tell the rest of the world, this is how we think. I mean, and this idea that that AOC is going to love Putin, Trump hates him, or whatever it happens to be, this is crazy. This is crazy. We have a place we need to protect, because we think that this is the American way, and we are a shining beacon in the world with all our warts. That's the way I believe.
And what our, you know, what each side does is they accuse each other of being in bed with the, you know, with the bad guys. They do. Both sides accuse, you know, it's you know, the Democrats are soft on China, you know, freaking I can't even think of that freak show that was.
Well, does anybody think that if Nixon?
What was that? Yeah. What was that? Who's the governor of Minnesota that is just a? You know, you were talking about the sleepover and the dads.
Yeah,
that guy is the dad that you definitely don't want coming in the basement during during a sleepover. In my mind, yeah, but that guy, I mean, he was depicted, and I'm not saying it's true or not, but he was depicted as being almost pro-China. Because he had had several trips to that part of the world. And Bernie Sanders, I think, was, and I might be getting this wrong, but I've heard that, you know, Bernie Sanders was so much in love with Russia back when it was the Soviet Union, he did his honeymoon there. So, you know, he's soft on the communists. I don't believe that Bernie Sanders.
I don't think he is either.
Wants us to be just like
Russia.
Well,
do you think,
I don't.
You think that if Nixon would have won, that somehow we would have handled the Cuban missile crisis any differently? I don't think so.
I don't know, yeah, but you've got to wonder if, because Nixon was a bit scarier than JFK and a little bit more mature, would he have had to deal with the Russian missile crisis?
Well, I think the
you know, do you see what I'm saying? Yeah. I don't even know if we would.
Well, that's this. Then you drop back into.
I honestly don't think that Putin would have gone into Ukraine like he did if Trump were president.
Well, this is the you know, the sort of conservative,
It's more of like the calculus around.
But
all
it's
of these
it's
things.
It's my guy. Yeah. My guys are manly men, and your guys are girly men. It's a they. You know, they would never.
And that's not what I'm saying about Kennedy versus. I mean, Kennedy was a young freaking president, dude.
By the way, they were the same age.
You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, he was in his early 40s, right?
But Nixon was the same age. He wasn't older.
I thought Nixon had a little bit of
maybe a couple of years, but nothing crazy. But Kennedy was in the war. I mean, you know. I guess what I'm saying is the thing that solved. I think the thing that solved the Cuban Missile Crisis the way it was Bobby Kennedy's idea to send they sent the two letters.
Yeah.
Well, that was Bobby Kennedy's idea. Yeah, and for those that don't know this piece of history. We were pontificating, they were pontificating, and everybody was threatening back and forth. And Bobby Kennedy said, look, let's send, you know, the blazing hot letter to the Russian government. Let's send a personal letter to Khrushchev and say, look, we don't want to do this, neither do you, do you? And that's essentially what turned the day, allegedly. Yeah. And that was Bobby's idea. Let's send two letters. One saying what we have to say, and let's... All right, hey, I gotta ask you this.
Sure.
I'm getting, both from clients that are here, and new clients that are maybe a little concerned about where some of their stuff is at this level, and a lot of people have a lot of the stocks we talk about all the time. The concentration issues are kind of right where you think they are, especially in Apple, because a lot of people bought Apple when it was $11, right? I don't know, I mean, they were brilliant for doing it. You know, God love them. And the difference in mentality, Russell, between me and being the trader my whole life and a lot of retail investors is, okay, if somebody drops me 5,000 shares of Apple today at 255, I hope you bought it at 11 because I love my clients.
Yeah.
But it really doesn't make any difference to me. For me, we're starting out at 255. And if it's at 250 last week, next week, I think we're down 5. Where you still think you're up, you know, 240 or something. I think we're down 5. So the question is, what do you do here? You can't just... I don't think you can just buy and hold from these numbers, even though...
No,
I don't think we're going to... I mean, I'm not predicting a collapse or whatever. How much do you protect? You can't protect by selling a 265 call for a buck. Okay, that doesn't help you a whole hell of a lot.
No.
Now, you want to just flat out buy the put insurance and pay for that? And what if it keeps going up another couple of years? You're mad, you know, you basically bought car insurance and didn't wreck the car. I think the stuff might be a tad too high to pick a number. I mean, you hear all day long about, you know, we're going to get a 5% correction, then it'll be a buying opportunity. If Apple starts to go down, I'm just picking on Apple. Could be Microsoft. Could be any stock you got. But if Apple starts to go down, I'm not so sure that $12 is the maximum. I wouldn't be all that comfortable doing a 255, 235 put spread and saying that's enough. I mean, this is a tough time right now to do what I'm doing, and I want to be perfectly blunt. I want to be perfect at it. And boy,
that's tough.
I mean, I know, so what do you think? Do you need full balls out protection here? Do you need some protection? I think the covered rights are kind of out because you're not getting enough money. I mean, if I knew I could sell a call for a buck for the next 5 years and the bucks start to add up, I guess that's protection, but tomorrow it isn't, right?
Right.
So, I mean, if you all of a sudden were dumped a portfolio where 7 different people, all of them have a big chunk of one of the 7 big stocks, what would you do?
I've got this opinion on those 7 big stocks about the spenders and the sellers around all of this AI silliness, and Apple's kind of outside of all of that.
I actually think they're safer, to be honest with you. But
yeah, they're kind of off to the side around that one. But you know, with respect to Apple, that thing's bordering on the 12-month highs, etc. I think you collar it. Right now, I mean, I would be looking at collars.
Now, what a collar means, you buy a put and sell a call. Yeah. Now, the problem there is, we got to go here pretty soon, but just I'll lob this one out there. I'll leave our listeners on a high note or low note. When you talk about option pricing, if interest rates go up, your puts go down and the calls go up. Now, I'm just going to say that. We'll talk about it more next time Russell's on, but... You know, when I first started Russell, when the interest rate was like 12%, say IBM was at 130, you could buy like the 125 puts and sell like the 145 calls for even.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that chip.
No,
is
you
sick.
Can't do
you
that
can't do
right
that?
Now.
No.
So what you can do right now is you can sell the 260 calls and buy the 250 puts that expire in January next year. And you can actually take in a $2 credit on it, and that's just because the stock's really close to 260.
But if you,
I only feel like the collars in this environment, you know, makes sense where there's, you know, typically when we're teaching collars, when I was at the Options Institute, stock would be at 50 and you would sell the 60 call and buy the 40 put or something. It would be equidistant. You've got I think what you have to do is you have to take a look at selling. You're going to be selling a call that has a strike closer to where the stock is, but the other one that I kind of like is where you maybe buy a put and then you basically buy that out of the money put but sell a farther out of the money put to where you're
so you're saying Apple
you're basically
could...
but you're buffering some of it. So like, you know, I said buy the 250 put. You can buy the 250 put. You can sell the 230 put that expires in January next year for about 475.
All right, so you're saying the worst that could happen to Apple is 10%.
Yeah, that would be you'd be guarding against a 10% drawdown. You could do the same thing with 20%. Typically with the equity market, I look at it's selling the 20% out of the money put because that's generally where we tend to stall out when we get a big sell off.
Well, when you come back on after your trip next week, I'll tell you a story about a client in 2001. We did that with an Oracle when it went from 65 to like 8. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, everybody Google the Google Mark Cuban Yahoo caller, and that'll tell you how those things can work for you as well if you time them right.
If the current administration and the Fed together, whether they take control of the Fed, whether they don't, if they're happy with putting 7% of money into the system, I don't think I want to shut Apple off at 260. I think it goes a lot higher, even if it maybe isn't, quote, worth it. I think it keeps going just because of the money.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit, you think we,
the keep going thing, it makes me worry about what we end up seeing on the back end.
So do I. That's where that comes from. So do I. Yeah. The further up the hill you go, the longer down the cliff must be, right?
Exactly.
Anyway, were you here or are you in Indiana?
I'm here, but I'm going to Indiana tomorrow.
Hey, so, you know, do me a favor, will you? We had somebody who was on the show a couple times. That massive dairy you go by, the owner of that's been on the show a couple times, Fair Oaks.
Oh, yeah, Fair Oak Farms, yeah.
You know, I asked the guy when he was on the show, that place is huge. It's, what is it, a couple square miles or something?
Yeah.
Don't they have like 50 births a day or some massive number? Anyway, but I asked him, I said, none of my business, but I said, how did you manage to get all that property? And he said, well, the initial chunk was an airport that they had condemned a lot of property for, and then the airport was never built, and he bought that. I don't ever remember any airport going to go in there. And he said, we've added on from there. You know, sort of like the same thing that we did here in the Southwest Burbs on, what was the name of the airport supposed to be? You know, that we were supposed to...
Piatown?
Yeah, I mean, is that still a gleam in somebody's eye? I don't remember any airport going to go in Indiana, do you? But obviously it must have happened because the guy bought it. I don't remember that at all.
Mm-hmm.
See if you can find out the skinny on that, just for my own...
I will, you know what, maybe I'll stop there. So
it's supposed to be...
They have a great restaurant. They have the best bacon in the world.
They also supposedly have a great tour.
Oh, yeah. The whole thing is just absolutely fantastic. Years and years and years ago, we went there with the family, and I took a picture and put it on Instagram, and Indianapolis Magazine did a story on them and used my picture.
You know why I came on the show? Because remember,
I'm a professional photographer.
Really? You know, remember Chris Manns? Chris used to help out on the show, and they had all these people that would come in from China and these agricultural swaps. And they took a bunch of those people down to Fair Oaks to show them what like a really good dairy looks like. And that's how he met the guy and had him as a guest on the show. Because he took the Chinese people down there.
That's
all right, bud.
Yeah. It's an incredible facility.
I'll be happy to talk to Dr. Demiak next week. We'll do.
Yeah, and she loves that place. Bring that one up.
She wants to talk a little bit about Vietnam too. That's a sore subject, but it's one that people have to know about once in a while. We'll do that for like 15 minutes, and then talk about price indexes and China and other stuff. She's terrific.
All the important stuff. Yes, she is.
You travel safe, buddy. SP futures up 13. NASDAQ futures up 60. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.